fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Then buy one, get one free on our full line sale of tender Tyson chicken with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Brandon Thurston from WrestleNomics is up next, and we're going to follow Brandon with John Pollock from Post Wrestling.
Thank you, and good afternoon, everyone.
But we can't ignore the math, okay? We can't ignore the data.
Go on Google Trends, type in your name, then type in mine. You're a straight line. I'm a pyramid.
I like the very direct question on that.
Television ratings, downward spiral. Buy rates, plummeting.
The time is now to turn the math around.
We're live for another edition of Pollock and Thurston. I am John Pollock alongside Brandon Thurston joining us from WrestleNomics headquarters. How are you, Brandon?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing all right. We are into the best time of the season. It's renewal time. It's television negotiation time and pro wrestling right in the thick of it, Brandon. Isn't this an exciting time to be alive?
It's been renewal time for the last, I don't know, year or so, at least last year.
I feel like this has been this just overarching story attached to AEW, their next rights deal. I'm curious.
Remember the upfronts, which were, we've now had the upfronts for this year, the upfronts last year. That's where everybody thought, you know, people were writing rhyming limerick poems about how, AEW is about to get a new huge $1 billion TV deal.
That's right. We are also coming up on the anniversary of Collision, and therefore the anniversary of One Bill Phil being part of the wrestling vernacular.
Yes. And most importantly, that means we will now soon be able to do year-over-year comparisons for Collision.
I mean, these are the things that you live for once we get to the year-over-year comparisons for AEW secondary programming. But we are going to be talking about all of AEW's programming as well. Later on, we're going to be joined by a correspondent live on site in Texas to report on what happened today in the mysterious hearing involving the WWE and Texas Attorney General, your friend and ours, Ken Paxton. Should we keep people on the edge of their seat for the findings?
Stay tuned.
Okay, stay tuned. Nate Wilcox will be joining us.
I've heard it didn't turn out that it might actually be postponed, and I don't want to false advertise to be clear.
Well, we will still have Nate on to explain what exactly went down in Texas or what didn't go down in Texas and what this means. What does this mean for Brandon? That's what we're going to get to the bottom of as well. But I mean, if there is one constant, Brandon, it's that, you know, since we last talked, we got the news of a two-night SummerSlam in 2026. I think that news came after we spoke last week. And all of these press releases, if there's one thing that Brandon's eyes goes towards, it's these public government entities that WWE is working with, and I'm sure you are immediately finding contact info for.
Yes, and some of those entities have immediately received a public records request, as we think that, as in the case of the two-day SummerSlam, not next year, but 2026, there's Minnesota Sports Commission, and then there's the I forget what it's called, but the Stadium Authority that controls U.S. Bank Stadium. Both of those entities, I believe, mentioned in the press release, which tells you these are the people maybe who made the deal, who are, you know, the leaders making the deal between the two sides. And when you have government entities mentioned these days, especially with a WWE PLE, that often means subsidies, incentives, site fees, whatever you want to call them. And maybe we'll learn eventually what the site fee was for SummerSlam. They got shortchanged on getting WrestleMania, but they're getting a two-day SummerSlam instead.
Yeah, and that will naturally ask the question of next year's SummerSlam, this mysterious 2025 SummerSlam that Michael Cole was openly questioning on the PLE this past Saturday. Well, Corey, we've got SummerSlam in Cleveland. We've got SummerSlam in Minneapolis. Where's SummerSlam going to be next year?
Who's going to be the lucky municipality? Who's going to be the lucky citizens from the fortunate government who are going to get to host the lucrative, the economically impacting SummerSlam in 2025.
So we will look forward to that. I'm personally rooting for one of these big events to go to Buffalo. I think that would be perfect.
Too small. Probably not enough money. Byron Brown might have that all on lockdown. I don't know.
Well, let's focus a bit on the latest going on with WBD and AEW, their television negotiations, which are still in the exclusive negotiating window. Right now, Tony Khan and David Zaslav, no speed dating has begun. They are locked together at the table, just passing notes back and forth. And what does the content of this offer contain? Well, this past week, Matt Bellany over at Puck had a report that sent everyone ablaze about what exactly is going on here. He reports that, first of all, the negotiating window would be expiring in July, which is consistent with what Fightful had reported, that it would be going into the summer, and stating that because WBD's Turner Sports is still in the exclusive negotiating window with AEW, the upstart WWE competitor signed a multi-year deal with Turner in 2020 with an option that Turner exercised. Now David Zaslav and TNT sports head Luis Silberwasser would like to keep the 5 hours of AEW programming per week on TNT and TBS. But the clock is ticking, Bellany states. I'm told the exclusive window closes in July, and AEW leader Tony Khan is said to be, wait for it, disappointed with the offer currently on the table. Khan also surely knows that Zaz losing the NBA would give AEW more leverage, even though the money to re-up AEW is a mere drop in the NBA bucket. If the window closes without a deal, others could swoop in for those rights, as Comcast has done with the NBA. Extra awkward because WBD is said to own a stake in the league. I'm not sure how alluring AEW would be to another platform, especially since only non-WWE partners could bid. But the wrestling shows still do okay on the Turner networks. It's reliable programming, and a rival suitor could further push Zaslav into hot water in his cable carriage deals. For now, though, both sides are playing nice. Last night, after the league's Double or Nothing pay-per-view event, Bellany's wording here, yes, I watch pro wrestling press conferences now. Khan said, I'm happy working for Mr. David Zaslav, and I'm hoping we can do it for a long time. So Matt Bellany having to slum it watching some of these pro wrestling press conferences here. But obviously the big focus here was the categorization of a deal on the table as being quote unquote disappointing. And it is worth noting that through Dave Meltzer's reporting stating that AEW sources have told him that the first offer was not disappointing to Tony Khan, but that the two sides have yet to reach any deal. Negotiations for both TV and streaming are ongoing with WBD, not TNT Sports.
Yes. So it sounds like someone at AEW is taking exception to the word disappointed being associated with anything involving the relationship between AEW and WBD. That is a joyous, appreciative relationship. Get it right.
Yeah. Was there an alternative word that they could have used to describe it?
Well, the deal hasn't been signed yet. Not satisfactory, not a blow away deal, not a good enough deal apparently to make AEW sign it and avoid testing the open market with at least some of the rights.
What's a term that would be so complimentary towards WBD, but also that you haven't signed it yet? Could it be too good to be true? We can't believe it. There's got to be a catch.
Good enough to not make you test at least all of your rights, you know, at least some of the rights on the open market. I've been saying for a while, I think it's quite possible. And if I were guessing, I would guess that AEW's rights, some of them will stay with WBD and maybe some of them will go to some other partner. There's a lot of rights here. And I think people, you know, having gone through this with WWE a couple times covering it, you know, these deals always end up more complex than you would have expected. There are partners that get involved that you never would have, you know, expected. You know, in 2018, we figured, well, it's just USA is going to renew all the rights. They hold all the TV rights. They'll just renew Raw and SmackDown. And then we had it split off to Fox for SmackDown, which no one saw coming. And this year, if you talk to people a year ago, the notion that Netflix was going to buy WWE rights sounds really far-fetched. And CW came out of nowhere and took NXT. So, you know, these are things that people did not expect. And I think we'll, to some extent, see some complexity here, maybe. And you got to think that there's not just Dynamite, but there's Collision and Rampage. These completely, well, these sort of unmonetized rights in at least in Next Day. But in particular, the pay-per-views will be a new element to this deal, assuming pay-per-views are part of a renewal, that will be cannibalizing the pay-per-view business, perhaps, or maybe it's an upcharge like with ESPN Plus and UFC. In any case, there's all these different rights, including the three weekly shows, the pay-per-views, the library, maybe Ring of Honor, if that's really worth something. But that's a component that you can put in the negotiations, as well as, you know, things like Spanish language rights. There's a lot of rights that could be dealt here that are not part of the current deal.
Yeah, I mean, there's also all these like other like floating content rights. Like we have these Battle of the Belt specials, your Countdown specials, on the back burner.
Everybody wants Battle of the Belt, so yeah.
I mean, there's going to be some bloodthirsty cable operators out there looking for that. Like it's an ability. If you just want to fill up your schedule, it seems like AEW has no problem turning on the faucet for the right amount of content that they can offer for a network that might be having a lot of hours to fill. But this is the most significant deal in AEW's history. And one of the questions I wanted to ask last week on the call was, everyone's going to be focusing on this number that is going to be reported attached to this deal. I'm very curious to see what their thinking is when it comes to the term that they're going to enter. If you're looking at a deal that might look great by 2029, great. If this is something where they want to lock down these rights and not come back to the table in 5 years, they want to lock them down for 10 years, it could be a major stumbling block, because you have to somewhat forecast, where is this industry going in the next 10 years? What's my ability for growth? And am I going to feel under monetized by the midway point of this deal as well, especially when you're taking into account pay-per-views being bundled into these negotiations?
I mean, if you look at the Netflix deal, it tells you, despite all of Mark Shapiro's victory lapping, TKO just made a deal for internationally, basically, you know, almost all of their international W rights. At least their, you know, their Raw rights domestically for 10, maybe 20 years. So that tells you that it's at least, you know, an element to put on the scale towards. You know, I don't know if this is going to be a huge, you know, media rights market in 10 years and 20 years, if you're letting Netflix hold on to this for who knows how long. And I would suggest if you look at the Netflix deal, there was complexity in that deal in terms of, it wasn't just a Raw deal. It's not just that Netflix has US Raw rights. It has almost all of the international rights, I think with the exception of the Middle East North Africa deal that's held by NBC, which is owned by the Saudi government. So as all these international deals expire, I think they're all going to turn over to Netflix. And I think you could see, at least it could be a component in the negotiation, that, you know, we've heard that VIX, which is the Latin America partner that AEW had, that AEW is off of that platform. DAZN in a lot of European markets, with the exception of pay-per-views, yes, AEW is off of that platform. It frees up, and probably not good news that you know, those partners are no longer distributing AEW every week, but it frees up those rights so that maybe a partner who has distribution in Latin America and Europe, including Max, including Amazon Prime, that maybe they would be interested in some of those rights. So it brings in the component of, well, maybe international could be part of this deal as well, just like international was part of the Netflix deal that WWE made.
Yeah. I mean, Canada falls into that market. They will lose WWE programming on Sportsnet 360 is the broadcaster that contains all the WWE rights up until the end of this year. And then those will all flip over to Netflix. AEW is still in the midst of its agreement with TSN. But just looking, like, for instance, the UFC started on Sportsnet 360 this year, and like AEW dwarfs what UFC does. Now, granted, UFC is on a Saturday night, not a great night in Canada in particular during hockey season, but that could be very attractive. And I think to put into context here, I was pulling up a AEW 2023 estimated revenue spreadsheet put together by the man to my side here, Brandon Thurston, that television rights you estimated in 2023 worth about $67.5 million in the US, $75.2 million worldwide, which would include ITV in the UK, Eurosport in India,
very precise number,
Bell Media in Canada, and Fight / Triller internationally, and then $1.8 million allocated to other geographical regions. And then the pay-per-view component, $19.4 million. So these are kind of the big numbers that we are looking at that you can break down and see what they are negotiating with. And I see a lot of room for growth internationally for them when you have this once in a lifetime opportunity that all of these international broadcasters are going to be losing WWE programming. They have experience in this wrestling genre, and you have an ability to fulfill that programming and potentially get paid nicely in some of these areas of the world that have been broadcasting WWE for so many years.
Yeah, that is one element. Do you see what I'm saying? Like the if you're Amazon Prime, maybe you want not just some domestic AEW rights, but that you want some international rights too. And I think Max is streaming not in Canada, but it is streaming in the United States. It is streaming in Latin America. It is streaming in certain countries in Europe. So I know AEW has some distribution in various countries in Europe, including France and Germany, through some WBD partners. But maybe that's a deal that makes sense to distribute AEW internationally as well, in terms of, you know, again, not just buying domestic rights to AEW, but maybe it would make sense for some of those platforms to get international rights as well.
Getting back to the reporting from Puck, certainly there is going to be a lot of, like, not so much public negotiations, but you are going to see a lot of games being played here in terms of, like, a lot of people are just looking at, I saw a lot of, who is this guy? Matt Bellany. I mean, who's this guy's source? And like, Matt Bellany is a pretty plugged in reporter. Now a lot of people have also noted the fact that he seems to have a very good relationship with Nick Khan. When he launched his podcast, Nick Khan was among his first guests. And to Nick Khan, to my recollection, since the Vince lawsuit was filed by Janelle Grant, Nick Khan has done one interview, and it was on The Town with Matt Bellany as well. So, I mean, certainly the wrestling audience, you might be shocked to believe this, very at times conspiratorial. Do you look at this as, you know, something that a Nick Khan would be certainly playing to these negotiations? And how much credence do you put into kind of these theories that are brought about in these kind of situations?
I think Nick Khan has great relationships with people like Matt Bellany, and I'm sure he has his ear. But Matt Bellany, before he worked at Puck, and he's a prominent entertainment reporter currently with Puck. Before that, he was with the Hollywood Reporter. I'm sure he has sources that he can check with to see, you know, is this accurate? If the notion is that he was told this by Nick Khan, that Tony Khan's disappointed with the deal, I'm sure he has people that he could ask. He doesn't strike me as somebody who wouldn't have connections with WBD that he could check on this deal to see, you know, check on this question to see if, you know, is it really the case that Tony Khan was disappointed with the deal? So he's a credible media reporter, certainly.
If anything, like, I would look at it as well from the other side, is that if you're getting this message out that Tony Khan would be disappointed with this deal, to me, it would tell me, if I was another broadcaster out there that is considering kicking the tires at this thing, it's kind of encouraging to me, the fact that this would lend credence to the idea, well, maybe they will outdo or make it to the non-exclusive negotiating window and take these to the market. I think it would at least put some people into the mindset of, okay, well, maybe it's not a guarantee that they're going to strike a deal before this window's open, and that these rights may go out to the market. And at that point, you don't know what left field opportunity might come their way. As you just mentioned, the fact a year out that we could have predicted the Netflix deal coming, like, it's, I don't think you can ever throw out the idea of a wild card option out there, especially for a young product in AEW, that I think that you could certainly look at the fact that there's the obvious suitors, but then there's maybe the not so obvious ones.
Who are the bidders, do you think? If it's not WBD for any of these rights, who else would bid on AEW? Tubi, Pluto.
The idea of a Fox having some interest, I don't give a favorable odds to, but not a it's an open option. I think that that would be an interesting one. I don't think they're leaving this WWE deal with some distaste for professional wrestling. I think they're leaving with a realization that at this price, this is not a value to us, but AEW would not be coming in looking for $205+ million per year. I mean, they could do half of that and I think be in a pretty good position.
I think it would be worth it for AEW to spin off, like, those maybe Collision and Rampage at like a tenth of the value of what they were paying for SmackDown, which is $205 million. You know, I could see something like $25 million for Rampage and Collision and then make a bigger deal for Dynamite, which is by far the most valuable piece of this deal, is the weekly TV show that ranks in the top five pretty much year round among cable originals in P18 and 49. But you have these other two shows, which, you know, combined, they're going to be 3 hours of content. They're probably not going to go on Fox in the first place, SmackDown is delivering more than 2 million viewers every week. It'll give you a fraction of the viewership, but it'll be at a very small fraction of the price. And probably, you know, if I were just valuing what I think is like the $75-ish million that I think WBD is paying AEW on an annualized basis as it currently is, of that $75 million, like what percentage of that deal would you say is credited towards Dynamite?
Of what they're currently being paid?
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, you would have to look at the 70%, 75%.
Right. Right. So I think, you know, without doing the math, I think you could, you know, put a lot of that into another deal for what might seem like on its face, not that much money, but that it would help AEW get a better deal than it might otherwise if you packaged all those rights together to one bidder.
Yeah, it's, what would you say at the moment would be the argument towards not going to the free agent market? Does it just come down to it would have to be a ridiculous deal that is offered from WBD versus, we're coming up on, you know, July. We don't know when in July, but what would be the argument against waiting until July just to see what all your available options are?
It depends on what the number is, right? You have to be pretty pessimistic about what you can get for AEW rights. You have to believe that whatever they're the argument against going to the open market, you have to believe that we can't get a much better deal than what they're offering, which whatever they're offering, it's sort of like, you know, it's a guessing game to imagine what they're offering. But if they're not offering a big enough number, then you have to feel like, well, the rights market is about to be pretty weak, and the NBA deal will in fact not be a good thing. The NBA not staying on TNT will not be a good thing for AEW, but will be a bad thing for AEW, because the argument would go lower carriage fees that we're not going to be able to replace. And AEW is being subsidized by these high carriage fees that the NBA was drawing in through all our distributors. And there's no replacement for that. So WBD is going to be even more in cost cutting mode. So we better take whatever we can get here. And hopefully it's enough for AEW to be financially viable in the future. So let's not test it out, and let's just be safe here, because we're in a really distressed market and we need to hold on to what we have.
Yeah. And the overarching issue that WBD is having relates to the NBA. And I have heard maybe every scenario that has been thrown out, and it seems that every other day there's a new one. And it seems like the options are, the most likely being WBD is losing the NBA. Then there is, well, maybe they could make life very difficult by arguing their matching rights. And then what? Does the NBA and WBD come to some sort of financial severance package to just move themselves off? Do they carve out some fourth television package for WBD/TNT? Do they go to court over these matching rights? I think that it's a bunch of different scenarios, the latter of which I think are very unlikely. But I think it's more and more we move towards this. This is going to be a departure of the NBA after nearly 40 years with WBD, which, yes, they are going to have a ton of savings if they're not spending it on the NBA, but that also comes with a drastic impact on your carriage fees, as you mentioned. This is also Warner Brothers Discovery that has like what, $39 billion in debt that they have to pay off at some point as well. So there's a lot of calculus that is going into this and how this trickles down to what is not your flagship programming in AEW, but is nice support if you can have it at a reasonable cost compared to these examples we have on the screen.
Yeah. And it helps you win Wednesday night in the demo most weeks, or at least be in the top five. And I think it raises to the possibility of WBD pursuing UFC rights.
And no dragon characters like Killswitch to promote House of the Dragon on NBA.
Was Killswitch promoted on NBA?
No. Well, Killswitch and Swerve are having a match tonight to promote House of the Dragon, which is something you cannot do on the Mavericks Timberwolves game. Yeah. Unless there is a dragon basketball themed character I'm not familiar with. But yeah, that is where we sit on the latest of this. So AEW through sourcing, they deny that they are disappointed with this, but I love wordplay. I'm a very big fan of arguing semantics about wording. I think it's a fun exercise.
Yeah, I mean, why not? What does the Observer report say? It says according to Dave Meltzer, AEW sources have told him with the first offer. Why not just have Tony Khan say something publicly about this? Why not just tweet about it? Tweet about his TV deal.
I think he is very nervous to say anything about these television negotiations, but not nervous enough they got this out very quickly, denying that they are disappointed. And
and to be clear, like I don't view this Puck report as something that was like negative. This was like a bad story. I think you can read it in a sort of paranoid fashion of like, oh, Nick Khan's manipulating the media again, and he's trying to bury AEW. But I read it as, yeah, this is consistent with what I believe in that there's an offer on the table from WBD to AEW. It's not so good that it's going to deter them from going to the open market. And it's for something, but it's not just blow away good that we're not going to take some of these rights to the open market. So that's basically what he said. He used the word disappointing, though, which I could see Tony feeling that that's not accurate to the way that he feels, or certainly the way that he wants to project feeling.
I think you're very sensitive in this negotiating period about the perception of your company. And let's be honest, like the perception of AEW has taken a hit over this last 6 to 12 month period. And the idea of them being lowballed in an offer doesn't enhance that perception. But I took it similar to how you did. I didn't view it so much as a negative. It's because there's too many unknowns in this as well. Disappointing in relation to what? Are we talking about the pay-per-views and the content? Are we talking about the length? Are we talking about how many hours they want to absorb? I mean, there could be a great money offer, but it is. And what is Tony Khan's expectation? It could be significantly above what is realistic as well. Like, is a 2x increase below what Tony Khan is aiming for? I would call a 2x increase. I would not be disappointed if I were AEW and that were the figure. But for Tony Khan, he might believe that he has greater expectations than this. I mean, we're just getting into semantics, but I would certainly hazard the idea that Nick Khan is the television rights negotiator whisperer that just plants something, and someone the level of a Matt Bellany is just okay. And Matt Bellany is like a very seasoned reporter, so I would proceed with that knowledge.
Maybe not a big wrestling fan, or
doesn't seem like it, but
or a fan of pro wrestling press conferences. But then again, who is? We have
he's in California, isn't he? He could have made the trek up to Vegas, I guess, if he had so desired. He could have taken in Double or Nothing.
Mm-hmm, I suppose.
Been there at the press conference.
He could have asked a real question.
Maybe he would have gotten to the bottom of Adam Copeland's injury before anyone else did, when Adam Copeland had to break the news.
Yes. We have a question here. Why would a company not want to go to the open market? It's not like the TV company will lower their offer. I would think that it's not great for the partnership that you're not just taking the offer that the incumbent is giving you, and trusting that they're going to give you a fair price. And I would think that maybe if you have to come crawling back to your incumbent, that they might not be inclined to give you as good an offer.
I think that there is that sort of like in a perfect world, you are loyal to your incumbent. And as I've said, I think Tony Khan does have a lot of loyalty to this company. And that was demonstrated last year when, you know, CW wanted to kick the tires on Ring of Honor. And he didn't feel that that would be in his best interest to strike a deal with a outside broadcaster, even though WBD had not shown an interest of Ring of Honor. And after being presented, hey, we have 2 hours of Ring of Honor programming, are you interested? They say no. And then they come back several months later. Hey, can you guys do 2 hours of pro wrestling programming on Saturday nights for us? Not Ring of Honor. So it seemed to be, Ring of Honor has just, these negotiations should also probably tell the tale of what the future of Ring of Honor is going to be. Because if these are not incorporated in some monetizable way, it really does continue to beg that question of the purpose of these extra hours you're producing.
And the impression that I've gotten is that, you know, WBD is not interested. If they were interested in it, it'd be on True TV or something right now. I think they want the AW brand, and Ring of Honor is not the AW brand. And it's, if you think of it within the AW umbrella, it's certainly at least the lesser tier of content that they have.
All right. Well, I think that's all on the AEW television front, but we will also be chatting about the latest that is going on in Texas momentarily with our guest, Nate Wilcox, is going to be joining us. There have also been several contracts that have come due in AEW with a few tenured behind the scenes contributors that are moving on. We learned Mark Henry announced earlier this week that his contract expired Tuesday. He is not re-signing, called it a mutual decision between the two. Arn Anderson also leaving the company once his contract is up. And Bodyslam.net has reported that Jake Hager's contract has expired as well. So we are seeing some turnover when it comes to names that have been with the company for a number of years, with both behind the scenes and in front, with Jake Hager being among the talent.
Yes. And will Arn Anderson be leaving his gun behind or not?
Ownership of the Glock remains to be determined if he will take that with himself. A very underutilized mouthpiece, I will say. I mean, great mouthpiece and a man who
has been on television much at all since Cody left.
No, very, very little. I mean, they didn't really find much of at least on air role for him after Cody. So that is it. I mean, Arn Anderson has been like gainfully employed since his career ended. And then in the end of WCW, immediately finding work with WWE, and was there for 18 years, and then immediately flips on over to AEW. I mean, he's had a longer behind the scenes career than he did as an active wrestler.
And Brock Anderson, his son, left AEW quite some time ago too, I believe, with the end of last year, something like that, right?
That's right. Yes. So those are the latest news. On the WWE side, we had several front office cuts over the past week. We got several names. Brandon and I reported that Beth Fisher, who is the head of corporate social responsibility in WWE, was among the cuts. And then there was another individual by the name of Michael Izzy, who was in her team as well. Yes. He was a senior marketing manager, also among the cuts. And yeah, there have been several names and yeah, just a further reduction. This didn't seem like a gigantic sea of cuts, but still not an insignificant number either. And continues those cost synergies that we always hear about. Read that as real people losing jobs. That's usually what cost synergies mean.
Yes, we reported that. You know, some people did take notice. We reported that on Saturday, the day of WWE's King and Queen of the Ring in Saudi Arabia. Some obvious jokes there in terms of what do you really need a corporate social responsibility department for if you're going to take $50 million from the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. I heard that news and I thought to myself, well, UFC, you know, I suppose doesn't have a department to create redundancies for WWE in that case. But lo and behold, they do. There is a UFC foundation. There is a UFC community outreach organization where things like Dana White is going out, and Dana White is cleaning up the waters in Florida. Did you know that? That's a real thing.
This was news to me that you brought to my attention. This was a nice shot of Dana White with the backdrop of the ocean behind him cleaning up the world's mess. Dana White.
Yes.
There's a new Roku series UFC is putting out. It's called Fight Inc. Inside the UFC. And it seems to be a series that just follows around Dana White, the life of a promoter, and the day-to-day dealings of the UFC's CEO. Seems like quite the in-house produced piece on the executive level of UFC. So maybe we'll get a WWE spinoff one of these days.
What was he doing? Working out, making business deals, taking down woke journalists. What else?
Yeah. I mean, maybe he shows us his Google Drive of all the MMA related media members and their comments about various fight cards. He has them by folder just so he can have those at his disposal for when a fight night or a pay-per-view does tremendously well. He's got all the clips ready to go, whether they are in context or not. Few television numbers to go through over the past couple of days. We had a Memorial Day, I understand, this past Monday. So numbers were delayed a bit. SmackDown on Friday night. This was the tape show from Saudi Arabia, doing 2,147,000 viewers and a 0.56 in the demo. So being taped by several hours didn't make much of an impact. They were down 2% in viewership, down 4% in the 18 to 49 demographic. This was going up against the NBA and NHL, which is slowly coming to an end. We are approaching the finals for each in the near future. I think Dynamite has one more. They will be up against game 3 of the NBA finals next week, and then they're in the clear. Saturday, actually
this
Friday.
This was for SmackDown, their lowest demo since that best of episode that they did at the end of last year. So it was on the low end for them. But if in the broader trends, you know, we're still at a positive year-over-year difference for Smith.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Then buy one, get one free on our full line sale of tender Tyson chicken with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, it's your chance to travel back to November 2004 as Wei Ting and I review WWE Raw featuring Trish Stratus and Lita headlining the show. Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson are going to be covering New Japan's Destruction in Kobe event, and MCU Later tackles Agatha All Along. All of that, plus Rewind to SmackDown and Collision Course weekly, and ad-free versions of Rewind to Raw and Dynamite. $6 a month unlocks it all at postwrestlingcafe.com.
SmackDown in an environment which Tony Khan will remind you is challenged because of cord cutting.
Well, Rampage was very challenged on Friday, airing at 6 p.m. Eastern time, which would be 3 on the West Coast. 222,000 viewers, which is a trivia note. This would be the lowest viewership ever for Rampage, and a 0.08 in the 18 to 49 demographic. So not a bunch of people that were leaving work early to get home to watch Rampage.
No, the countdown did almost the same number. It did 218 to Rampage's 222, which is, I guess, a better time slot, really, to be on at 7 o'clock versus 6 o'clock, probably.
Yeah, they were. If you remember, on Wednesday they were promoting Rampage at 6:30, and then maybe they figured out the countdown was airing at 7 or something, because then suddenly it was, well, Rampage will be on at 6, not 6:30. So there we go. Collision on Saturday. They flipped networks. They went from TNT to TBS, doing 415,000 viewers and a 0.15. This was the live show from Las Vegas the night before the Double or Nothing pay-per-view, taking a 21% drop in viewers, but only dropping a 1% in the 18 to 49 demo. Bit of a increase among women in the core demo. Not a stunning number for Collision.
Yeah, but in the demo, it held up so well. I was kind of surprised, given that you changed networks here, because of the NHL playoff game that was happening on TNT. But not much of a drop at all in the demo.
If it is one thing noteworthy, and this was like in the early days of Dynamite, there were the occasional times during playoff season and such that Dynamite did get moved. Like there were some Saturdays. I feel there were like the odd Thursday that they moved to. I think Dynamite has been completely unaffected during this whole playoff run, whether by coincidence or just more of a like priority programming.
Because they're on TBS in the TNT.
They are years. Yeah, that's right. That's right. That is.
You remember when Dynamite was originally on TNT, and especially in that year where the NHL rights had been picked up by WBD, they were bumped around a lot, but a lot less now that they are on TBS, which has less sports.
And no Raw number as of yet. It's been delayed. The Memorial Day edition of Raw coming off of King and Queen of the
Ring. That should be available sometime tonight, hopefully.
Yes. And tonight's Dynamite will be
NXT in the morning. And then we're back to the normal schedule for tomorrow afternoon with is AEW dying or not? Reporting of the AEW Dynamite number.
Oh, is this one of those Dynamites? It's the life and death of AEW type of episode tonight at the Kia Forum?
Well, that's every week.
Yes, the latest will come out on Dynamite. They have about 4,800 or so tickets out for tonight, and lineup includes the House of the Dragon promotion. We've got a Forbidden Door Casino Gauntlet match, and the debut of Chris Jericho's TV time.
Yes, I saw that.
Okay, so some interesting segments coming up tonight. But when we talk about exciting, it doesn't get much more exciting. Then one of the recurring characters here on this show, he is Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton. He is not joining us right now. Unless he wants to call in, he is more than welcome to
get the link
from Brandon. Oh, I would love to have him on. But down at the courthouse today was the man who joins us now. You can follow his Substack newsletter, The MMA Draw. Nate Wilcox is here with us. Nate, thanks so much for joining us today to chat about the ongoing politics of Texas and WWE trying to withhold all of these public records requests that Brandon has been inundating the state with.
Happy to be here.
So we kind of talked about it off the top. We were supposed to be getting a hearing earlier today. This was after Ken Paxton had kind of, lost his notice underneath his desk. I'm sure he gets a lot of these. But finally did respond last week to the complaint, keeping this alive. And then the countdown was on to today's hearing. Can you tell us about the fireworks that went on at the courthouse today?
Well, they had the docket online in a PDF yesterday. And every case had a court number. Like, there's a judge, Jan Soifer, who's assigned the case, but she wasn't going to be running the hearing. But this one case did not have a court number. So I go down to the courthouse this morning. They send me up. They give me a courtroom number. They send me up there. I soon determined that this case is not going to be heard in that room. They just sent me to the room where they have the family law cases that haven't been assigned to a room. Then they send me to the administrative the court administrator, which is on the 12th floor of the brand new building. Lovely building, by the way. And I get there. There's no one in the room. There's a phone with a note on it that says, call this number to, get the court administrator's hotline. I go through the phone tree several times before I think I've got the right one. I get pretty excited. That forwards me to the district clerk. And then I navigate the district clerk's phone tree. And that ultimately sends me back to the court administrator's line. So I'm literally just in a circle going nowhere. And so I went back downstairs and they figured out that the case had been bumped to another day. And so I'm going to try tracking down the associate attorney general or whatever his title is that's handling the case, try to call his office and see when they're going to reschedule it. Because I was surprised to see that Paxton did push back against this. Which was interesting to me because Greg Abbott's office seemed to be in support of the WWE's position, which was no surprise to me. Of course, Greg Abbott's in favor of not letting the public know how much San Antonio spent to host the WWE. But I was kind of surprised that Paxton went in a different direction. And I doubt Paxton himself is even aware of this case. But yes. So I assume it's just the Attorney General's office going on automatic pilot at this point, and they're automatic pilot. Presumably their default setting is the same as everybody else's, as of course San Antonio should tell us how much taxpayer money they spent to bring the circus to town. But
yeah. And I don't know if Nate, you've had a chance to look at the complaint. This will be new news to John. In the complaint, at least the version of it that I have, they have a number of exhibits. I think one is my records request. And just to set the table, what we're actually talking about here, if people don't know, Royal Rumble happened in San Antonio in 2023, in January 2023. It looks like there were some incentives that WWE got from the local government, that is from the city government in particular in San Antonio. I made a records request for information related to the Royal Rumble event. I got quite a bit of information about the attendance, about the gate, things like that, about emails with people detailing heartbeat counts and things of that nature. We reported on that, but we did not get the information related to whatever the government agreed to with WWE. They withheld that. They got approval from the Attorney General to do that. But then there was a records request later related to some WWE lawsuit at the end of last year. And the Assistant Attorney General who looked at the request from the city a second time decided, no, you do have to disclose this. And thus we have this lawsuit. But where was I going with this? So the complaint has as an exhibit the ruling where it was overturned. It's a 3-page ruling. I have page 1 and 3, but not page 2. But lo and behold, yesterday I got a random email from the Attorney General's office with the full letter, which I do have now.
And page 2 contained?
Oh, a lot of legalese. It didn't feel like it was that revelatory.
I see. Was it something they'd redacted before or just randomly not delivered?
No, I can put it on the screen in a moment, but it has the justification for, here's the letter of the law about why we're overturning this ruling that, you know, a previous assistant attorney general, did approve, that you can withhold this. So it's basically detailing the chapter and verse in the Texas government code that under these, you know, under what's in the law here, we're ruling that this does have to be disclosed. Which includes any information in an account, voucher, or contract relating to the receipt or expenditure of public or other funds by a governmental body. I don't know if that was just accidentally left out in the original complaint or not, if it was omitted for some reason when it was given to me. But there is, you know, it's referring to a specific line in the law here that says that any information about a contract between a government body has to be disclosed.
That's a good law, and I'm glad that they managed to find it and include it. I thought it was funny that the language that Abbott's office referenced was anything that might be embarrassing to the city of San Antonio, yes. that was a reason to not disclose, which is
yes.
embarrassing the government when they've misspent public funds is exactly the point of the Freedom of Information Act. So, but leave it to Greg Abbott to, you know, the blind pig finds a truffle every now and then or something. But do you think there's a split between Paxton's office and Abbott's office here? Or do you think that it was just a assistant AG doing his job and reading the law?
I would think it's the more boring answer, that it's just a different assistant attorney general looked at it because there was a second request after my request and had a different opinion, a different reading of the law in November, or actually this past January when that second ruling was made. It's interesting, though, so I made two requests almost simultaneously to the governor's office, one for this Royal Rumble event and another for WrestleMania in 2022, which was in Dallas. And it's only the Royal Rumble request, or is it the WrestleMania one? I forget. It's only one of them that uses this exception of, you know, intimate and embarrassing.
Intimate and embarrassing. The WWE site fee figures revealed.
Yeah.
I think we also have to look, Nate, that this to me, it's an important story. I know it's not getting like everyone's attention here, but this is somewhat like ground zero for UFC and WWE, as they are going to continue to look for these site fees. And if they can create this argument and then take it to other states and just have this kind of blockade right at the get-go that we do not want this stuff released. And I think it's a hard argument to make when this is taxpayer money that is involved, but that's obviously the case they're trying to build here, and using Texas as sort of your precedent that they can take to other municipalities that are not going to have the, I think, the same scrutiny, given that it's pro wrestling and MMA, and that this, I don't know if it's going to garner the same level of critiquing that maybe, you know, larger, you know, sports events like an Olympics would have, for an example.
Yeah, definitely. And they definitely have a pattern of using this venue shopping to set precedents. And then they use those precedents to get other jurisdictions to go along with it. It's very similar to the way they got California to sanction Power Slap, which Zach Arnold covered for us at the MMA Draw, which is just a completely underhanded, like every dirty trick you could possibly do, a public hearing scheduled at the last minute in an odd venue on a Saturday morning with no audio or video feed, no journalists invited, no transcript made publicly available. Zach just happened to have some contacts that were in the room and clued us into what happened. They had multiple doctors who normally work with the California State Athletic Commission who had said, Power Slap bad, no way, no how ever, this is terrible, do not do this. The my housekeeper's back here. Let me shut the door. Andy Foster, the chairman of the California Athletic Commission, had said, no way are we ever going to sanction Bare Knuckle or Power Slap, blah, blah, blah. And then suddenly they've got like, not quite Dr. Nick from the upstairs Hollywood School of Medicine, but a doctor from like the Fresno branch of some major, it sounded official. Like it's a well-known brand in medicine, but it was like the Bakersfield branch or the Fresno branch or some, you know, San Bernardino, some crap like that. Like a town with a big Hells Angels chapter, but not really a well-known, you know, medical center. That this doctor is just loving Power Slap and thinks it's perfectly safe. You know, now that California sanctioned it, Texas, which barely has, it doesn't even have a commission, it has a board of review, that, you know, Texas is going to sanction it, and the dominoes are falling, and they're going to be getting these site fees. The Power Slap model is really fascinating. I mean, you know, like there's no way they're drawing the eyeballs they say they're drawing, except maybe the very quickest sort of TikTok glances, but they're getting all these sponsorship deals. Who are usually the, you know, the regular TKO and Endeavor sponsors are also sponsoring Power Slap, and now they're going to get it in site fees. So it's just a great way for the TKO executives to get another bite at the apple before the shareholders get any of the profits of the company. It's amazing. I'd love to ask you guys though, how different is the WWE run under Ari Emanuel versus the Vince McMahon years? Are you guys seeing any dramatic differences yet?
I think I think they're coming in and they see literally a blank canvas of what they can squeeze money out of. And just, it's all fresh material. For all you want to say about like Vince McMahon and his intricacies, like this guy just had this religion about keeping that mat clean. And like, this is a company that just sees all this revenue potential. And I don't think they have any loyalty to the way that things were run prior, and they're coming in and it's just fine. Like, what can we do that we're already doing that we can make more money off of? And I think the site fees are a perfect example of that, of we're doing these shows anyway, and can we extract site fees? So I only see that increasing more and more, and that UFC and WWE, other than the core differences between the on-screen product, like these are going to be run in lockstep with each other in terms of kind of very much the similar revenue streams.
And pretty much by the same people, because they're going to eliminate redundancies. You're already seeing that with the live event teams, I think, which is pretty funny because Dana White just went on some podcast and gave an impassioned speech about how the spreadsheet guys only see numbers and I see people and I just hate layoffs. And he was blaming COVID, the COVID overreaction for forcing them to do layoffs. But you know, they did 15% of the staff when Endeavor bought UFC, and he just said that's normal, including his best friends Matt Hughes and Chuck Liddell and Forrest Griffin. I think one of those guys survived the purge, but the other two got whacked. You know, and then they've just laid off basically the whole event team combined the whole event team for one of those organizations. It's just normal cost of doing business. So if it's, you know, layoffs because of an international pandemic, that's bad. But layoffs because Ari Emanuel needs more revenue, more profit, that's good. So, yeah, it's something else. And extract value is exactly right. And if you noticed Mark Shapiro talking about how they're not going to be going to C-level markets anymore, even though that that's where a lot of the hardcore fans are, there's just too much opportunity cost. And if they can run these shows in the warehouse in Vegas, excuse me, the Apex in Vegas, then, you know, I'm just spending money traveling, blah, blah, blah. But what they're really doing, I think, is sending a message to places like Louisville, which is already ponied up for this combined package, that unless you pay an exorbitant site fee, we're not coming, you know, to Louisville. We're not coming to Charlottesville or, you know, these second tier, third tier towns that are the heart and soul of both these promotions are going to get extorted because they're all about extracting value.
It's something that Mark Shapiro had spoken about pretty early on in this relationship in terms of on the WWE side, cutting on what he called the C and D markets, which I think are mainly the house shows that they run. And they're still running house shows. When I looked at it at the end of 2023, it was fewer house shows than they had ran before. They are still running a number of house shows each weekend. But it is something that it seems might get cut more and more as time goes on, because I'm sure the profit margin is just a lot lower, in those smaller towns. And by the way, if Dana White cut a promo on a spreadsheet, guys, then I think, John has to track that audio down and put it into our intro. I have to seek that out. But they do see all this growth opportunity in sponsorships. We're seeing a little bit of it. Certainly they're willing to put sponsored space on the canvas. I think WrestleMania was probably the most pronounced example we saw of a lot of things, including nearly every match had a sponsor. No one will ever forget Dude Wipes being illuminated on the ring posts during WrestleMania. A lot less of that. I took a lot of notice of when they were in Saudi Arabia. I wonder if being in Saudi Arabia makes it harder to sell sponsorships for that particular show. There was no Prime logo on the canvas, as there had been for the past two premium live events. But that is an area that they see a lot of opportunity in. And site fees had been in the air before the merger. I believe WrestleMania had been getting incentives for a long, long time, at least. I was looking at something from 2012 when they were in Miami, John. They basically got the convention center for free to run Access at. So I don't know if that's indicative of other things, but there had been site fees in the air for a long time, and that was definitely something that Nick Khan explicitly said that they wanted to do more of. But with Endeavor in charge now, clearly they're going to pursue it more. And it's certainly worth them spending, I don't know, several tens of thousands of dollars maybe to fight this case, if it means in the end they can make, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not millions more, by having the benefit of not having it reported by a nosy person like me what exactly their deal was with the city of San Antonio.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's free money for politicians. I mean, it's not their money. And it's frequently kicked back to them in the form of campaign contributions. So politicians will give away millions of dollars to a company, then they'll get tens of thousands of dollars back in campaign contributions, and it's just a self-licking ice cream cone. And if they don't have to report it, then all the better, because that's the only break. It's not the politician's money. It's only when the public knows how the politicians are spending their money that there's any cost to it. So, yeah, I think what you're doing with the FOIA request is very important, and thanks for doing that.
Another topic I just wanted to throw your way was one of the benefits on the UFC side from this merger is that it got the connection with Saudi Arabia, and Vince McMahon somewhat brokering that connection before his latest resignation. But now, you know, you go just look at like Ari Emanuel's history of turning back that $400 million investment. And now UFC entrenched, they're going to the market in a few weeks. They're already talking about the idea of a longer term deal. And just some of your thoughts on like the impact that Saudi Arabia is having now, in particular to boxing, but it's these gigantic fees that WWE are getting for their shows. And now UFC is in the mix. And this has been, you know, deals that have come under great scrutiny, but it seems like it's full steam ahead. And there are more so just an acceptance of, you know, the operating in that part of the world and for exorbitant amounts of money that are for the taking in combat sports.
Yeah, MBS is the absolute biggest money mark on the planet right now, and is, you know, poured so much money into boxing. It's great for the fans, but they didn't show any ability to market those pay-per-views that they've done so far, the two Ngannou boxing matches. And they got so lucky that he knocked down Fury and there was a lot of interest. And instead of being the squash match it should have been, Fury apparently didn't train. Ngannou's style was pretty effective against Fury's. You know, Fury's whole style is clinch somebody, weigh on him, lay on him. And you're not going to do that to an MMA heavyweight like Ngannou. So, and Ngannou can hit really hard. He's not a great boxer. And you know, the second big fight, Joshua showed clearly the guy has extremely limited boxing skills. But the second pay-per-view didn't do any better than the first one. So the Saudis didn't learn anything about how to market a pay-per-view, even though they had what you would think would have been a really hot property because of Ngannou's, you know, is he going to do it again? Is he going to shock the world a second time? Yada, yada, yada. And they did deliver the Fury Usyk fight, and I haven't seen the numbers on that. Again, it's great for fans. Money marks typically are great for fans, but, you know, it's the biggest whale out there. And the fact that Emmanuel and the Saudis apparently have patched everything up. And I think there was an element of kayfabe in giving that $400 million back. I think there was probably a wink, wink, nudge, nudge along with that. And Emmanuel is an incredibly adept political actor. I mean, never forget his brother Rahm is the ambassador to Japan in the Biden administration, which is one of the most plum ambassadorships possible. And it's only because he completely disgraced himself as the mayor of Chicago that he doesn't have a more high profile position in the administration. The Financial Times recently called him a man who can create a diplomatic incident in an empty room. And I'm told by people who can read Japanese that he's at least weekly creating some kind of embarrassing incident for the U.S. government. But nonetheless, Rahm is the ultimate Democratic insider. Ari's his brother. They're very tight. Their brother Zeke is also a big influence on Biden's, you know, COVID, what's COVID medical strategy. And it's also been extended to the avian flu epidemic that's breaking out in dairies all over the country. Avian what? Huh? Who heard of this? You know, let's get people back to work, get back in the offices. Anyway, Emmanuel has, you know, made Dana White this explicitly Republican actor. And totally kayfabed his audience into thinking the UFC is just as Republican. And they then extort Bud Light after Bud Light, you know, stumbled into this trans disaster and actually impacted their stock price in a big way. So you know that the deal that they got with Anheuser-Busch is way bigger than the sponsorship deal that Zuffa UFC got under them. They, you know, they literally are able to extort Anheuser-Busch into, we're so MAGA, we can save your brand. We can get you the South back if you'll just pay this extortion fee. And meanwhile, the guy who's Dana's boss is one of the biggest, you know, Democratic coastal elitists you could possibly get. You couldn't get more blue state than Ari Emanuel. But the dude is slick and willing to do things like giving Prince Bonesaw his money back. You know, just the other night in Hollywood, he was introduced by Jeffrey Katzenberg from DreamWorks at the Simon Wiesenthal Center, getting some kind of award for, you know, being a great Zionist or whatever. And he comes out and calls for Netanyahu to be, removed from office. And literally, Katzenberg leads a walkout, and he's outraged a good chunk of Hollywood there. But it's a really brilliant play because Netanyahu, you know, clearly the Biden administration wants him doing this. Like, it's not just an accident. It's coordinated and thought out. They want to separate themselves from Netanyahu and this genocide going on in Gaza, which everybody knows that the Israeli population is for this. Everybody else in the government is for this. Like, you replace Netanyahu and the same stuff will go on. But you get Netanyahu's head on the platter and, hey, problem solved. We got a bad guy. You know, so it's really slick and duplicitous. I mean, Ari Emanuel is the most Machiavellian player, I think, in the business world today. Like, it's just incredible what he's doing, and nobody wants to talk about him because if you had a little, like, you know, like glasses you could put on and you could see who represents everybody that's talking on your TV screen, if you're watching ESPN or TNT, you would have Endeavor, 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 CAA, CAA, Endeavor, 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 like Endeavor, like, owns everybody you see talking on sports TV pretty much, or owns, represents, you know. And it's the same way if you're watching Entertainment Tonight or whatever. It's you know, they've really pulled ahead of CAA on their agency representation. And then this TKO scam they're running where they've got these two massive cash flow entities in WWE and UFC, it allows him to have this fantasy that he's going to turn his talent agency into an IPO, you know, internet level growth stock or something, because he's got all this cash money. So he can do things like piss off three quarters of the executives in Hollywood one night and, you know, not even feel a ding. It's, I don't know. I feel like we're getting to study the work of a master. Like nobody has corralled combat sports and sports entertainment like this ever and turned it into pretty much a low risk operation, just a cash machine. And, you know, I'm in awe of it. It's pretty incredible to watch.
Yeah. And I think it's only going to intensify the next months, though. It's almost now become a element built into all of the pay-per-views as they go off the ESPN broadcast of Trump getting his own entrance and presentation. And in this election year, like, I don't think it's going to be an insignificant element here of Trump doing a number of these campaign stops at UFC pay-per-view events. And it's a direct line to a key voting block for Trump. And like, that is, I think it's for you, the viewer that tune in and just want to separate the politics that have become a big part of these broadcasts. I think it's going to be very hard to separate those in these coming months, where it's going to be a close election. And these are a lot of young voters that, you know, UFC is more than willing to put on a platform and present to its audience.
Oh yeah. And it's just amazing that he can butter his bread on both sides, that he's down with the Biden administration, he's down with the future Trump administration, that, you know, totally hedging their bets. And they know that fight fans are not going to stop buying because they got pissed off about Trump. I mean, UFC fans have been pissed off at Dana White as long as I've been in this racket, which is 16 years now. And they keep coming back. Like people do get burned out because there's too many events, there's not enough stars, and they have a kind of a churn model where every 5 years or so they completely replace their audience. But in the short term, they're not losing people that are addicted to these products because Trump's there. Like the people getting mad at Trump and going on Twitter, excuse me, X, to talk about this, that's just money in the bank for them. They want that kind of controversy. They want the events to generate heat. And it's effing brilliant and unbelievable. I mean, it's not been that long ago that Dana White was saying, oh, we don't want politics, we don't want this kind of controversy, you know, let's and the guy's a lifelong Democrat anyway. It's amazing that, I mean, a lot of people have moved to the right, you know, in the past few years. So, and obviously Dana's politics are oligarchic, you know, give me money. But it's again, I suspect kayfabe as far as the way he's completely embraced Trump. I mean, speaking at the Republican National Convention, unheard of for a sports commissioner, if you consider Dana White a sports commissioner, but that's a different discussion.
Before we let you go, can you let everyone know about the MMA Draw newsletter that you're launching on Substack, and what's been kind of some of the feedback since launching the newsletter post Bloody Elbow for you?
I mean, this used to be the Bloody Elbow newsletter. So the feedback has been, you know, we lost some subscribers because people were pissed that sold Bloody Elbow, and the new owners people don't like. But, you know, whatever. I was not the world's best businessman in a position where I basically had to make a sale. But the MMA Draw is still holding on to its subscribers. It's, I think, the best place to get your if you're betting on the UFC. We've got our staff picks before every UFC for paid subscribers. Everybody on the staff, even me, has like at least a 60% accuracy rate, and some people have much higher. So it's, I think the value of it is, if you're a bettor and you're looking to bet on UFC events, this is a good place to get your info. Plus, I sneak in a lot of spinach and vegetables for people's brains with coverage of what Ari Emanuel's doing. Getting Zach Arnold, who is a legend in the MMA journalism business. He's the American writer who documented the Yakuza involvement with Pride that ultimately brought down Pride and basically Japanese MMA. And he's applying that same kind of canniness. And he called things like he predicted that state commissions would be arm twisted into sanctioning power slap like 6 months before California did it. When California did it, Zach documented every dirty underhanded move they did it to get it sanctioned. And he had people at the hearings, which they made very difficult. We're the only people that had that. So I think it's a good mix of down and dirty, get your, you know, info to make intelligent picks when you're putting money on the UFC, and also learn a bit about the history of the sport, the technique of the sport. We also have Miguel Class writing technique pieces and you know, getting kind of, I like to say that if you want to understand the game behind the fights, that the MMA Jaw is the place to read it.
Well, I encourage everyone to go check it out. It's really great work that you guys are doing, and there needs to be more of it in the space, in my opinion. But we appreciate you jumping on with us, Nate, even though the hearing was delayed. But hopefully we can have you on at another time when they finally sit down and we get some resolution to this and can report the embarrassing and all the gritty details of these site fees that TKO is acquiring. But thanks so much for jumping on with us, Nate. We appreciate the time with you.
My pleasure. Thank you. Mate.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, it's your chance to travel back to November 2004 as Wei Ting and I review WWE Raw featuring Trish Stratus and Lita headlining the show. Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson are going to be covering New Japan's Destruction in Kobe event, and MCU later tackles Agatha All Along. All of that plus Rewind to SmackDown and Collision Course weekly and ad-free versions of Rewind to Raw and Dynamite. $6 a month unlocks it all at postwrestlingcafe.com.
All right, Nate Wilcox joining us, and there you have it—the state of TKO, right there for everybody. So, a big delay in this hearing. We will see what the future holds, and how long of a delay that this is, Brandon.
Yes, well, I'll keep watching the docket, and we'll see what happens. At least the Attorney General's office has made a response, so it's not going to be it's going to be a little bit tougher for WWE to get a ruling in their favor.
So. I got a message while we were doing this that today Tony Khan was on the Rich Eisen show, noting that they are auctioning off. So today Khan brought out the infamous neck brace and not only signed it for Rich Eisen's charity to auction, but went ahead and Tony Khan bid $100,000 for the neck brace. Khan
on then his own neck brace.
Yes. He then gifted the neck brace to the Rich Eisen studio where it will now live on Eisen's bust as a, photographs have been displayed here. So this looks like the little mannequin head that they would use on the old Batman series to go down to the Batcave, and this has a neck brace over top of it. So there you have it. The neck brace going for $100,000.
There we have it. For people watching in video.
Look at Brandon is world record in terms of speed here. Look at this with a hat no less. So there you go. This is also confirmation that Tony Khan now 100% healed.
Yes, he's fine now. I really think this was an opportunity to keep wearing the neck brace and sell some sponsorship revenue. But, it's an opportunity missed.
Okay. Well, there you go. That's going to bring an end to the show. And we will have more to come in the coming days and weeks. You can look out. Brandon and I may have a story coming in the coming days, so you can keep your eyes peeled for that. And WrestleNomics Radio can be heard each and every Sunday at patreon.com/WrestleNomics. And the first Sunday of every month, Brandon goes free. All the freeloaders out there get a chance to sample WrestleNomics
Radio.
And that's
this coming Sunday, because Sunday is June 2nd, so it's the first Sunday of the month to be free for everybody. And there are quarter hours right now for SmackDown, Rampage, Collision on Patreon. Right now, they just went up today.
All right. And tonight, Wei and I will be live right after Dynamite from the Kia Forum. So you can check out youtube.com/postwrestling for that. And also want to make mention that if you're in the Toronto area on Saturday, July the 6th, we are doing our next live show, the Cash In at Yuck Yucks here in Toronto, 224 Richmond Street West. We will be doing a live Q&A with myself and Wei. Braden Harrington and Davey Portman will be hosting several wrestling themed games. I understand there may be some karaoke going on. It's happening at 2 p.m. Eastern time, and it's about a 15-minute walk from the Scotiabank Arena, the site of that night's Money in the Bank event. We will see. I'm going to try and get Brandon Thurston to attend this, but we may have to get his presence through a site fee.
We're in negotiations right now. I'm not represented by Endeavor, but my agents are in talks right now.
Yes. Brandon Thurston and WH Park, they have very strict rules about they don't leave the house unless it's for X amount. So they're always tough negotiators to get in person. But we hope to see many of you there.
I will be in Toronto, though.
You will be, yes. Yes. For Money in the Bank weekend. What are you going to that weekend? There's like 5,000 WWE shows that weekend in Toronto. Are you just going to Money in the Bank?
I think so. Yeah. What else would I go to?
You're not going to take in a live Indie SmackDown. Heat wave. There is a GCW show that's happening. Nick Gage in Toronto on the
Friday. Is Smash doing anything that weekend?
I believe Smash is
pop quiz.
I don't think they are. I know that at the end of June, Smash is doing Daniel Makabe's last Canadian date. Okay. Daniel Makabe is a bidding farewell. I think they're doing that the afternoon of Forbidden Door. So that's what's happening in the Toronto wrestling independent scene. We've covered all corners from Texas to Toronto and what is going on. But if you want tickets, postwrestling.com/live for tickets to the cash in. That's going to wrap things up. Thanks again to Nate Wilcox for joining us. Thank you to all of you for tuning in live as we scan the comments here. I think we got to all the super chats. Thank you to Victor who just joined the Patreon, Brandon. There you go. Another satisfied customer. Thank you, Victor. That's it for us. Thanks, everybody. Speak with you next week.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, it's your chance to travel back to November 2004 as Wei Ting and I review WWE Raw featuring Trish Stratus and Lita headlining the show. Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson are going to be covering New Japan's Destruction in Kobe event, and MCU Later tackles Agatha All Along. All of that, plus Rewind to SmackDown and Collision Course weekly, and ad-free versions of Rewind to Raw and Dynamite. $6 a month unlocks it all at postwrestlingcafe.com.